Accession number 20058, reel 4.
Major Frank Broderick, reel 4. You said you'd had their help previously.
Yes, we had. On the way across from Pococu, from the... which is the place that has all the, what do you call them, pagodas. Literally hundreds and hundreds of pagodas in that part of the world. And they came across from there with us. And of course we're very, very useful, efficient, and you know, they were... They made the movement towards MacTilla so much easier. When we got there, there were still quite a number of Japanese, they called them snipers, they weren't really, but they sort of hid behind a tree and had a shot and moved to another one, that type of movement. And the chap who was doing the attack at the time was a friend of mine, and I thought that he required a bit of help. There was he'd had a few casualties, not all that many, but I could hear. I was going around. I sort of counted that as one of my duties, and I could hear somebody, as I thought, groaning. And I thought that, you know, that it was one of the forward company's chaps had been wounded and left behind. So I wasn't quite green. I got borrowed two people. One of them was a sergeant with rifles to cover me in going forward to see if I could see this wounded person. So it was an old paddy field. It had an old bank with no water about and palm trees and things like that. So I went on that and stood up behind this palm tree. Looked where I thought the noise was coming from, looked to the right, couldn't see anybody, looked to my left, saw a gentleman with a rifle, which I couldn't get out of the way, out of the way quite in time, and it caused this, and
that's a wound on your lip.
On my lip, yes, it hit just here, and it continued on its course. It felt like being hit by a sledgehammer, to put it mildly, and I dropped back down behind the bund, and I say these two people that had brought us cover, they fortunately had the sense to deal with the Japanese gentleman who fired.
And this was at MacTilla?
This was at MacTilla, yes.
Do you know the date?
I know the date, yes, it was... Um, was February, but...
February 45?
Yes, oh, it was 45, sorry, yes, 45. I was thinking of the day, I can't...
Well, don't worry about that.
No, it's that. And, I say, these two chaps that I had, as it were, supporting me behind, they dealt with the Japanese so-called sniper, and I took myself off back to report. One of the things I'd picked up on the way, mentioned it, was I'd picked up a Japanese flag very, almost in, well, not very often, should I say, that if they are, Japs are attacking or even in a forward position, they very often keep a flag folded inside their tin helmet. Well, I'd found one that had a tin helmet, and he had his flag, his ensign. I took it back with me and met my colonel, who was by now was Colonel CMR Spedding, who was good. And so I explained what I'd done. I told him what I'd done and gave him the flag and went off to the first aid post to be treated. So that was the end of me as far as that was concerned. I went to the first aid post and they did a minor stitching up and put me up with them to wait for the next day's plane flying out, which it did, and so I was flown to Dakar, I think it was. Then from Dhaka to Calcutta, and from Calcutta back to Ranchi. And I was out for about, I think it was about a month.
What did you think of the medical treatment you got?
Very good. Very good indeed. The man who actually did it, I came home on the same ship. His name was, it's a four-letter name, something like Mead, M-E-A-D, that wasn't it, but it was like that. And he did it a second one, because it had, by that time, it had started to heal up and, you know, pull my lip up, and it was unpleasant. So I went back to where I left him in Ranchi, and he wasn't there. But they did a sort of a make peace job, and I came back to McTilla.
They were still at McTilla?
No, they weren't. When I got there, they weren't there. I was told where they were, because there was an airstrip there, and they were at, I don't know, 50, 40, 50, 60 miles further down at a place, I think it was called Yamathin, but that's where it was. And they said, well, every day or twice a day there's an American flies up from where they are with the casualties they have. And if you go to him, he'll fly you in. So the next morning I went to the airfield at MacTilla, and there was an L. Are you familiar with aeroplanes? An L5. An L5 is a two-seater that is quite small, and they used them in situations like that. They had the pilot was flying from the left-hand side of the plane, the cabin, and they had a stretcher on the right-hand side, and he all day long virtually was flying them back to MacTilla. So I asked him if he would kindly take me to the regiment, to the border regiment, and he said yes. I reported the next morning he'd fly me down, which he did. I don't know whether I enjoyed that ride or not. It was a time when our people were in blobs, as it were, and in between there were the Japs. But this chap, he'd been doing it a week or two or three or four. He was very good. He flew it at ground level, or as near as Dammit. He was, you know, really to save his skin, I suppose, flew me down to where the battalion were. And I moved on with them.
Were you given your old job back?
Yes. Well, I got that same rank back. I think somebody else had it, but I picked up somebody else's rank, should we say.
But you were intelligence officer again, were you?
Sorry?
Were you intelligence officer
yes,
again?
Yes, yes. The only difference was that I had a new one with me. It was like an assistant one. He was an Australian. We'd got
reinforcement?
Yes, reinforcement of Australian officers. There was about four of them, and they took the places of the people of ours who'd been wounded. And so I had my job back, and I had a second in command as well, as it were.
What were these Australians like?
The one I had, I liked, he was very nice. There was another one who played rugby, who was a nice chap. And there was another one or two who they knew most things on this earth. They really were a bit, it's cruel to say that, but...
You mean they were know-alls?
Oh, they did. Yes, they did. But that's the sort of thing you shouldn't say.
And they were from these were Australians?
They were Australian, yeah. Hmm?
Any other incidents you recollect from this time, please?
Well, further on down, the names don't. They continued to move down as far as Pegu. Pegu is about 50 miles north of Rangoon, but they weren't in time to get into Rangoon because the air and sea landings took place in the meantime. But there were still a lot of Japanese wandering loose, and quite a lot further to the east and the complete west. And there's one piece which Spedding wrote, the Colonel Spedding wrote the there's a little green book which has a little chapter on the 9th Battalion. He wrote a little bit in that about the 9th Battalion, and when he came to this section with him, he was hoping to move west to the railway line in the hope of getting his own troops across the railway line to the other side, because it was up against the Irrawaddy area. But he, on that particular day, he was in a jeep. There was Colonel Spedding, there was his driver, there was me in the back with an extra body. And we went along half a mile or so, and a little Burmese came running out of a biggish house, and I knew enough Burmese then to get by in simple language. I've forgotten it now, but I asked the chap, you know, why he was running, what's it about? And he said, there's a Japanese in this building, this house. And we left in an awkward position, because the jeep that we'd been in was about a half a mile back. And the thing that no good infantryman should do, it left our rifles behind us. We had no means of shooting, and so I was faced with a colonel that I didn't dare get shot. The private soldier, and you can't send a private soldier on. There's all the rest of us. So I walked to this house, quite a biggish house for Burmese. It was had an upstairs and downstairs, and it had some outside stairs. So I walked up the stairs, and nothing happened. I opened the door to go into the house, and as I opened the house, there was a never opening a door at the other side of the of this house. I thought, oh God, you silly so and so, and out from this, behind this door, was a miserable little Japanese, about 5 feet, knees knocking. Everything. He came gently downstairs with us, and I always thought it's Spedding in that place, because he was a blood and thunder man. in voice, in things he said, you know, what he'd do if he got hold of them. And this little Japanese made an obvious signal that he wanted a would like a drink. And Spedding got his water bottle and gave it to this Jap. With myself and the other chap looking on with our mouths open. He was the sort of chap who would really tell you what he was going to do. He'd fed this chap. But nobody ever split on him, fortunately.
For showing kindness? For showing kindness?
Yes, well, he was a very kind man. But to tell that story in a book, whatever it was.
Don't get up though, please, because you've got the mic on.
Jeff, it's a good job. Anyway, we, as far as we were concerned, then we were virtually at the end of the war. We were sent, Spedding, by the way, in a day or two, went home on leave because there was no need, because the Japs then had said that they were giving in, and I was given the job of from Paegu to Billin, that area, was given the job of meeting their representative from their army to they'd signified by radio, etc., that they'd finished, and they were now sending, as it were, proof of it. So I had to wait for this gent to come, and they'd given me a jeep to carry him back in. Anyway, this gent came along. He was the same rank as myself, but he had you see these gentlemen in their finery. He had one of these beautiful uniforms, and I was in my scruffy, what's it, so I was a bit bloody minded at the time, so I told the jeep driver to meet us half a mile ahead, and so I marched with him, and having got the half mile and worn his beautiful clothes a little bit, he went off, and that, I suppose, it was the end of the war for me. We went from there, we went to a place called Billin, B-I-L-I-N. When we got there, there were elders of the village were having a meeting, because they were apparently having a lot of trouble with dacoits, and we did all we could in that direction. This is my wife, I presume.
What did you do about the gang robbers?
Oh, sorry, yes. We, we had the knowledge of what to do. We sent them out in smallish groups, and they cleared them up. Prior to that, which is nothing to do with us really, we were somewhere near Billing there. We had a visit from an English, an officer. There was, in those days, they had a thing called a Force 39 or something of that sort, who worked behind the Japanese lines. A representative of theirs came, and this chap said, if you have any trouble with the dacoits or any trouble with anybody in this area, will you please let us know and tell us what? And I thought, well, what can he do that I can't do? So I said, what's the method? Well, he said, well, this is a Billing River here. It was quite a big river. He said, day or two later, you'll see them floating down the river. That was that.
Who was this? Who said that?
It was some... It had a... Force... It wasn't Force 365, but it was something of that nature. They'd been behind the Japanese lines over quite a long period of time. They always used to astonish us. You know, the sort of folks that we were peep round a tree or peep round the building, and they were miles behind the enemy.
When you were doing your job as intelligence officer, how did you gather intelligence? What kind of intelligence were you gathering?
The positions of the Japanese. And we had, and I should have mentioned this as well, we obviously couldn't, my Burmese wasn't good enough to do very much, she could a few basics, but we had with us most of the time some young men, Burmese Intelligence Corps, and when in doubt, when we couldn't make out what someone said or what someone had found, then we consulted them, and they were very good indeed.
How do you feel now about having served in Burma with the Ninth Borders?
I go back to Carlisle annually, almost every year. I went last year, but I didn't go the year before.